My aim in this session is to spend the first bit of it going over the givens of graded readers, things that I feel whatever else you might be doing with graded readers, you'll be doing these things automatically to get your students reading extensively, yeah, and supporting that process. I hope that that doesn't take too much time. If anybody has got sort of major discussion points that they want to raise, you're more than welcome on classic reader use. You're more than welcome to keep in touch with me. I've been giving out my cards. I'll give you my email. You can follow me on Twitter. You know, we can have a kind of dialogue going if you want to, beyond the scope of this session. At the end of the session, what I want to do is something that I've come into fairly recently, and it's this idea of really, really exploiting graded readers in different ways. Ways that you don't normally think of. You think of a graded reader for extensive reading, but there are actually a lot of quite interesting intensive reading tasks that you can do in the classroom to encourage your students to do more extensive reading. So hopefully, God willing, inshallah, you know, we will get to that stage of the session you know, and have enough time to deal with that, because that's the most interesting bit for me. Yeah. Okay, you with me so far? Good, right. Okay, so my starting point really, and why I came into this whole thing of wanting to be involved as a series editor with a graded reader series, was going back to the 1990s, and this comes from teaching reading skills in a foreign language, and there's this idea of a vicious circle of reading and a virtuous circle of reading. And I think that's true pretty much of all skills, but my particular interest in this session is reading. The idea that if you read slowly, you don't enjoy reading particularly, you don't read very much, and therefore you don't understand very much when you read, and therefore you read slowly. So it kind of repeats itself. That's the vicious circle. The virtuous circle enjoys reading, reads faster, reads more, understands better, and so, you know, it's an upward spiral. Now, obviously, we want to get our students into that upward spiral, the virtuous circle of reading, rather than that downward spiral. So a lot of what I'm going to be saying in terms of supporting, scaffolding the extensive reading experience is this idea of, if you have students who are stuck in this downward spiral, just to tip the whole thing over so it becomes a positive experience for them. Yeah? Okay. Very often, when you're setting up an extensive reading program, you can feel a bit like Atlas, carrying the world on your shoulders, you know, trying to make sure that it's all working smoothly. And of course, there is quite a lot that the teacher has to do in terms of providing support for the reading. Things like, you know, if you have a reader's library, you're getting the students to check out the books, you're getting them to return the books, otherwise your library gets progressively smaller as the books get borrowed and go AWOL and never come back, yeah? And you might want to have some follow-up evaluation, you know, are the students doing the reading, etc., etc. So there's a lot that the teacher would need to do, but the good news is there's a lot that, if you're using materials that also provide inbuilt support, that makes the teacher's job of supporting a lot easier. So it's not the teacher having to carry the whole weight, it's the teacher plus the inbuilt support from the materials. And really, that's the philosophy behind the Domino's Readers series. We'll just look at a few examples. The techniques I'm talking about are things that I've been putting into practice in this readers series I've been working on, but they are good techniques that you could use with any readers series that you happen to choose or that you're familiar with. The first thing, of course, is very good idea to have some pre-reading activities. Especially if you're working with students with class readers, you need to build up the motivation to read. If you're using a library, it's a little bit different because the students are able to choose, yes, I like this book, yes, I want to read that one. Things like trying to build up motivation to read, trying to orientate the students to perhaps the time setting of the story, the geographic setting of the story, really activating their schemata, getting them with a picture of the sort of story that they're going to be reading. That makes their understanding, especially for weaker students, a lot clearer. You might also want to pre-teach vocabulary, and you might want to encourage the students to predict things about the story. Now, as I say, whatever readers series you're using, these are things that I think are a given you should be doing. In Domino's, we have the before reading page, which does all that for you, so you don't have to create exercises. It's there on the page. I think it's important to keep the students reading. One of the problems is, you know, students get very used to wanting to understand every single word, or perhaps even translate every single word into the mother tongue. And so they might become very dictionary dependent, you know, not wanting to read freely and with flow. So in order to keep the reading flow, in the Domino's series, what we've done is to highlight keywords in the story. These are words which are particular to that story, a little bit above the general grading level, but we need them to tell that story naturally. We give glosses on the page. Different readers' series have different ideas about this. Some of them put the glosses at the back of the book. Some of them don't highlight the words. You know, there are different options. Whichever series you're going for, I think it's important to make the students realise that there is this support in the material, that there are these, if you have a series, a lot of them do have these glosses either on the page when the word occurs or at the back of the book. Point that out to the students so that they know there's a support. They don't have to go to the dictionary every time. Another thing, of course, is very good to check on if the students are following the story so far. If you're a weak student and you don't understand chapter one, you're going to have problems with chapter two. You're going to be going off track. So having a chance to consolidate that understanding of the chapter that's just been read with a whole class, so that the stronger students can maybe help the weaker ones if you're working on the same book for all the class, you need some kind of support. The teacher can do this orally, but I happen to think that it's quite nice to have exercises there on the page so that you could set that as a pair work or a group work discussion activity. Then it's not so teacher-centred. Then the teacher can pull the whole thing together and you can have a class discussion based on these checking of the reading, checking of the understanding so far. Very good support for weak students. Sometimes they can't really understand the story very well, that chapter that they've read, but if they have a chance to compare with stronger students, and if they have a little potted summary of that chapter, maybe they can understand the potted summary. And with a bit of help from the stronger classmates, that can bring them up to the level of understanding. Very good basis for discussion, something concrete to discuss. These are things that a good teacher would be doing anyway. Yeah? But rather than just having all that weight on the teacher, if you have that material somewhere in your reader, we've got it absolutely on the page where you need it between the chapters. Other readers' series have the tasks at the end or in a separate activity book. Whatever it is supporting the weaker student's understanding. I think it's very important to have ongoing prediction as well. Again, it's probably something that a good teacher working on extensive reading would do anyway. But having a little prompt task on the page, again, is quite useful for pair work or group work discussion. And I think what I've noticed progressively is with the sort of digital generation of students. I'm particularly interested in young teenagers, and they don't seem to have as long a concentration span as young teenagers used to some years ago. The concentration span is getting shorter. The multitasking ability is getting better. You know, if I look at my teenage children, they can do like three things at once, you know, be chatting, doing their homework and talking to a friend on the mobile, you know, all at the same time. I couldn't do that, yeah? So multitasking better, but concentration span shorter. In the old days, you could set a motivation task at the beginning of reading a whole book and then say, read the book, and the students would be able to do that. These days, I think you have to crank up the motivation after every chapter and before every next chapter, so that the motivation is high to read on. Reading is a fantastic way to help build vocabulary, and everybody says that, but I think unless you're doing something with that vocabulary, getting the students to activate that vocabulary, recontextualize it, check that they've understood it, can they match the word with the picture, put the word into a sentence, unless you're activating it in that way, it risks staying as receptive vocabulary, vocabulary that the students will recognize but not necessarily be able to produce. So in our readers series, again, different readers series have different policies on that, but in the Dominoes series, in every chapter we have an exercise on activating the vocabulary and recording the vocabulary and checking that the students understand the new vocabulary. a new thing about the new edition is that we decided that we would include some grammar pages. Now this is This is coming out of lots of research in different countries around the world. In my experience, teachers quite like grammar, and students generally don't. So it's that, you know, how do you square the circle? What we felt was, graded reader story is a fantastic source of language, and grammar is just part of that language. So just as extensive reading is good for vocabulary teaching, it's also good for grammar teaching. And it's much more interesting for students to, if they've read, this comes from Hercules, if they've read about Hercules and some of the gods on Olympus, it's a bit more interesting and meaningful for them to be doing a grammar exercise based on the characters that they know and love from that story, rather than, you know, John and Mary, the grammar exercise people. You know, John is standing by the window, Mary is sitting on the sofa. Who cares? Nobody, you know, they're just not very interesting characters. But using the characters from the story, the situations from the story, makes it memorable, makes it fun for the students, and for the teachers, they see the value of that grammar consolidation. Not teaching new grammar, but consolidating the grammar through reading. In terms of in-class to outside-class bridging, this is a particular area of interest to me, because if you have restricted class hours, you don't want to, you want to make the class use of those reading hours as efficient as possible, and you probably want to extend outside the classroom so that the students have maximum exposure to reading in English. So this whole area of bridging is very important. Now, with Dominoes, this is terribly easy to do. As I've said, every chapter has its follow-up activities, so to start with, you could get the students reading the chapter, doing the follow-up tasks, and checking the answers in the classroom. You're training the students in how this particular system of reading works. Next stage, very easy. You just ask the students to do the reading for homework, a preparatory homework. Yeah, read that chapter at home. And then the next reading lesson, you do the follow-up tasks in class, and you check the answers in class. And the next step would be ask the students to do the reading for homework and also the follow-up tasks. Ask them to complete those, the reading check task, the word work task. And then you check the answers in class. So gradually you're pushing the students to do more in a supported way outside the classroom, and you've got that follow-up in class to make sure that the students are actually doing the reading. Because I know this is a worry for some teachers, you know, yes, I tell them to do this reading, but do they really do it? You need some kind of crunch time in the classroom where you're checking, policing, if you like, that reading. This gives you more time for what I call textploitation activities, which is the fun, intensive reading stuff that you can do in the classroom, getting the students interested in these different stories that you might have in your reader's library. Now, one of the things I have to say is that a lot of teachers may be totally enthused by the idea of extensive reading. They love to give their students stories to read. But generally what they do at the end of every story, you know, read this story and write a summary at the end so I can check that you've read it, or write a book report. And then the next reader they give out, read this one and write a book report. You know, and then the third one, read this one and write a book report. Effect of this on students? Do they love it? They hate it. They hate it. I think the general effect of always setting this summary book report is, you know, not that again. And unfortunately, that has a washback effect on the reading. So students hate the exit task that you're setting. They end up hating the reading itself, which is totally wrong. It should be the other way around. The task should be supporting and enhancing the reading experience. So this is where, in Domino's, we came up with this great idea of varying it, not always asking for that same exit task. So we decided to have different projects. Fantastic for CEF portfolio work if you're doing that. You know, these projects can go in the portfolio. Sometimes the projects are imaginative. This is from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Imagine that Captain Nemo is on a chat show, you know, Oprah Winfrey or whatever, yeah? And he's being interviewed. And then you have Aronnax also being interviewed. And then the students, we have step-by-step, controlled, semi-controlled, and then a freer stage. So it's kind of guided writing as well as a bit of imaginative work there for students. This is one from Mansfield Park. This is a very nice activity, actually totally generic. You could use it with any story. Get the students to create a character acrostic. The names, the first letter of each line of the poem must spell out the names of a character. This is a jumbled acrostic here. We've got Edmund here, and we've got the ends of the sentences that they've got to match up. This is Fanny Price, yeah, this is Edmund Bertram, yeah. So you can then get the students creating their own acrostic poems. Quite a nice creative writing project, much more interesting than that writer summary. And it's still a good test of, you know, do they know the characters from the story? You can also do internet research-based projects. One of the things that I find these days is you have to be aware that with the digital generation, the young teenagers don't necessarily find books attractive. They find computers attractive. So you have to start doing blended learning work, a little bit of a traditional book. We've tried to make the Domino's as sensual a read as possible, with lovely, beautiful pictures, lovely feel, lovely smell when you open a new one. You can't really get that on a Kindle yet, yeah? But it is good to try and build in some of this modern technology too. So this is working on different castles, coming out of Tristan and Isolde. So this is Tintagel, Bran Castle, and then they have a castle of their choice. Again, controlled, less controlled, and freer stage. You can have personalised projects. This is one coming out of a Sherlock Holmes story. No research necessary. Basically, the students, they've got a model here, you know, Sherlock Holmes, different things about Sherlock Holmes as a character. There are a few prompts here, but, you know, the students are probably going to be choosing from their favourite detective series. Interestingly enough, Sherlock Holmes has been had a bit of a comeback with this new film with Jude Law as Dr. Watson and who's the guy? Robert Downey Jr. as Sherlock Holmes. And there is also, I understand, in the pipeline, Sherlock Holmes, which is completely modern, you know, 2010 version of young Sherlock Holmes in London, I guess. Yeah. Sometimes you can have language-based projects. This is from Journey to the Centre of the Earth. And here, there are a lot of sort of, you know, finding their way down tunnels and things in the story. So we thought it would be quite nice to tap into the sort of computer game idea and have this. It's a bit like a maze. They've got to follow a path, follow the instructions through the maze. Then we're getting them to find different things in the maze, and they can hide something where they want it in the maze. So you can have language-based work coming out of a story. Okay. That is Not too bad. That is the kind of traditional stuff that I think we should probably all be doing with readers anyway. Any questions so far? Have I been so bombarding you that, yeah?
Hi, I'm not a teacher, but I run resource center.
Yes.
Like a self-access center. And we are running different kind of activities with the kids, with the Domino's readers.
Right.
But what I feel from, because I'm working in Bangladesh.
Yes.
The students are mostly underprivileged children.
Yes.
They don't have the language background that much.
Sure.
And I like the dictionary thing.
Yes.
Page.
Yes.
Have you ever thought about translating it in different languages?
It has been done in some markets. Sometimes we take something like the a Domino's title, and if it's considered important to have that translation element, we could take the glosses and we could give a translation as well as a definition. But this, you know, we can certainly keep in touch. If you want to keep in touch with me about that, we could explore that. Yeah. The other good thing about the new edition is what we've done with the CD-ROM that now comes with each book. We've got an audio glossary, so the students can click on the words that are glossed on the page, and they can hear the pronunciation, native speaker pronunciation. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Just I noticed you got the glossary on the page.
Yes. Yes.
But how many words do you think should be in the glossary? I noticed that we got very short texts, and I noticed 7 words.
Yes.
Don't you think that 7 words, I mean, in one page for a short text?
I agree with you. If you're looking at that page just as a complete text, but what you'll find, what we've done, we've been very, very careful as we go through the story, those words will be recycled all through the other chapters. What tends to happen, there's an average of about 10 to 12 words per chapter that are glossed. But what tends to happen, obviously, there's a tendency at the beginning of a story, you want to introduce the important vocabulary that's coming in that story, and there's a tendency for what I call front-loading of the vocabulary. So maybe in chapter one, you get slightly more than that, and in the later chapters, slightly fewer, because you're going to get the recycling. Yeah? Okay. But I agree, you know, different readers' series have different policies on that. As we believe that reading is fantastic for vocabulary work, we have been quite, you know, we haven't skimped, we haven't reduced down to like just 2 or 3 words per chapter, because what's the point? You know, it's a good idea to embed those words in a memorable context for students to remember and be motivated by. Any other questions? Okay, right. Now, do you have a task sheet? Some of you do. But some of the later ones, I think, don't. So could you please make sure that you get together with somebody who has a task sheet like this? If you don't have one yourself, could you sort of come and sit next to somebody? Anybody who's sitting at the back who would like to come forward, you're more than welcome to. Yeah? Do you have one of these? Ah, mine is a bit bigger. Yours have been printed 2-on-1. Okay. Okay. Come and sit. Yeah. Right, got my bell. Right, okay. What I'd like you to do is to have a look. You don't need the ghost story or the love story. That's coming later, okay? But if you have a moment of idleness where, you know, you're bored with what I'm saying, you could read those stories, yeah? What I'd like you to do is to look at that first activity on your page there, which I think is called Activity A. Yes? Are we on the same page? Has everybody got Activity A? Yeah? Okay, good. What I'd like you to do, with the person next to you or behind you or in front of you, preferably somebody that you don't know. I was specifically asked by the IATEFL organising committee, please make sure you have a lot of group work where people are working with people that they don't already know. So could you deliberately not work with your best mate who's sitting next to you, if you are sitting next to your best mate, but with the person that you don't know sitting in front of you or behind you, or vice versa? Yeah? Okay, but try and work with someone you don't know. Could you order the lines? This is the opening of a story. Could you order the lines in the way that you think they should work best to tell that opening of the story? Can I stop you there? I'm going to be ruthless and horrible and maybe not let you get all the way through activities, but it's because I've got a lot of activities I want to show you. It's not really so important for you to experience the whole activity, but just to see how it works so that you can replicate it with your classes. Okay, now, I could use the fabulous new dramatised audio from Domino's, which has different actors and sound effects and music, but I'm not going to, because I thought if I'm running short of time, I can go faster, but it's going to be difficult to tweak the audio. So I'm going to read the text, and could you just check the order against what I'm reading? I'll do different accents for the different texts, just so that it's a little bit more interesting. Yeah? When our story begins, King Anguish is the king of Ireland, and King Mark is the king of Cornwall. Ireland is a bigger country than Cornwall, and so every year King Mark must give money to King Anguish's brother Morold and his men. One year King Mark is late with the money. Morold is angry when he comes to Cornwall for it. The money for my brother is late, he says, so this year you must pay more. Tristan, King Mark's nephew, is angry with Morold. You must fight me, he says, before you can take the money. Morold fights Tristan. Morold's sword has poison on it, but Tristan kills Morold. Morold's men take his dead body home. Now Cornwall and Ireland are at war. Okay, how did you do? More or less okay? Yeah? 100% okay, fantastic. But actually, it doesn't really matter if students don't get it 100%. What is interesting is that they're kind of interested to hear how it really sounds when you put it all together. And what a fantastic opening to a story. I mean, this is one of the things that I realised. Wow, we normally think of graded readers for extensive reading, but when you start looking kind of, you know, if you like, with a magnifying glass at the opening paragraph, wow, you've got it all in there. You know, poison fighting, country at war. What's going to happen next, you know? I mean, in Domino's, we have, after every chapter, we have exercises working on comprehension and prediction, but you can split it down even more. Just the opening of a story. Doing an exercise like this would be a fantastic way to get your students interested in, hey, there's this story called Tristan and Isolde. I might go and read that, yeah, because you've presented it to them in this kind of micro rather than macro way. Now, there are different things. This is one of the illustrations, hugely blown up, I have to say, from this version. A lot of the starter levels we're doing in comic strip. I don't know how you feel about comic strips. I think a lot of teenage readers read graphic novels, you know, so why be snooty about it and say this is not real reading, you know? I think you can have a great comic strip presentation. Now, the other thing that you can do, if you do have a comic strip presentation, you could present those jumbled texts as we had them, but instead of using the audio, you could say, look, here are the pictures. Can you match the texts with those pictures? So that would be another way of jumbling and ordering the text with visuals. And that is how it appears, you know, with the text. So that would be a check, yeah? Okay, so I'm very excited. Although I'm a great book person, I do like this sort of digital revolution. I think probably when printing was invented, everyone was probably saying, oh, my God, it just won't be the same as writing a book out by hand. You know, they're going to print them. Oh, how terrible. But, you know, we kind of got over that hurdle, and now we're into a new one. Yeah? Both very exciting. Okay, right. What have you got for activity B? You've got some words to stick into a text. Could you quickly do that with the unknown person who's perhaps a little bit more familiar to you now, hopefully? Can I stop you there? Viciously stopping you halfway or even not even halfway through. But you've got the idea how the activity works. Would you like to hear the text as it appears in the graded reader? Obviously, with a class of students, I wouldn't do this like this. I would let the activity run on. I see you looking a little bit worried at my classroom management. It's just I know I've got to get 10 years' worth of thinking about readers into a 60-minute slot. But the version of the story with the words that I've extracted put back in the place as they appear in the reader is this, if you're interested. Would you like to hear it?
No. Yeah.
The statue of the happy prince stands on a tall column over the city. He has gold all over him from head to foot. His eyes are two sapphires, and there is a big red ruby in his sword. All the people in the town love him. He's very beautiful, says one of the town councillors, but he can't do very much. When a little boy begins crying for something new to play with, his mother says to him, "Why can't you be happy? The happy prince never thinks of crying for new things." A sad, tired man looks up at the wonderful gold statue. He says quietly, "Well, there's one truly happy man in the city. That's something." Some poor young students walk past in their red coats. They see the sun on the prince's sapphire eyes, and they say, "Look, he's an angel." The bit that goes on, which I didn't have space to do because I just wanted to take little snippets, is the teacher says, "How do you know? You know, have you seen an angel? Stop dreaming." Yeah? But nice little continuation, but we didn't have space to do that. So again, really the idea is to get the students predicting on a micro level what do they think is this text is going to be. Then you can let them listen to the text, read the text, and they might well think, hey, this is rather an interesting beginning of a story. I might like to read more of that. So it's this idea of a little taster in the classroom to get them motivated. Right, now, for your next task, as the series is called Dominoes, I thought it would be quite nice for us to have a little text domino activity. So this text is the opening of the Dominoes version of The Tempest, which is at starter level, which was quite a challenge to write. I did the adaptation myself. We had to play around a little bit with the chronology because we don't have any past tenses, so you can't have any flashbacks. But it is actually, if you look at the book, very, very, very faithful to the Shakespeare original. I also thought for students we need to have more than this, so I said, could you please make the illustrations look like the Shrek movies? And I think the artist did quite a good job. So hopefully teachers will love it because it's Shakespeare. Students will love it because it looks a bit like Shrek. Yeah. Okay. Your idea, your task now is to put the dominoes in order to make an opening sequence of phrases. As you can see, I've helped you because when you have blank dominoes, yeah, the one with the blank on the left is the beginning, the one with the blank on the right is the end text. Yeah? So you've got to just build up that line of dominoes to see if they will all fit together to make a cohesive text. Have a go. Yeah? You're allowed to talk to each other to check your ideas. Can I stop you there? You're grappling, I can see, with this exercise. I think it would probably be better to do this exercise actually with cut-up cards. But I'm afraid I chickened out. I thought if we have 90 people and we've got these sets of cards all over the place, it'll go crazy. So you've got the idea of how the activity would work. I think it would be more successful if the students, very good for kinesthetic students, to be moving their dominoes around and seeing if it works, you know, maybe going and looking at other people's lines of dominoes. Would you like to hear the original sequence? Obviously, if you're doing it with a class, you would take off the numbers and you would do them as cutouts. Okay. In my zeal to get my handout ready, I forgot to take that. Okay. Without the numbers. I put the letters in because if you're doing it on paper, it's convenient to be able to talk about, you know, card A. Yeah? But actually, if you're doing it as a cut-up card activity, you wouldn't need either numbers or letters. And now I will just read you that opening of The Tempest. And again, if you've got the audio version, you can play that. You've got music, you've got sound effects, you've got different voices. But I, for convenience sake, I'm just going to read it aloud myself. Here is Prospero, the Duke of Milan, with his wife and daughter, Miranda. When his wife dies, Prospero sees nobody. Some women look after Miranda. I'm learning magic, Prospero tells his brother Antonio. Look after Milan for me. Antonio soon feels angry. I'm doing Prospero's work, he thinks. I want to be the Duke. Yeah? And again, you know, in a very, very little text, you've got a fantastic beginning of a story. You know, you've got all the bit about Prospero and Miranda. You know, she's neglected. Of course, they're brought together on the desert island. You've got the whole revenge thing just in that very, very short text. So if you're at all interested in using literary texts in the classroom, which I am, a graded reader text is a sort of potted version of the sort of things that you can do with those literary texts. Okay, right. Five Canterbury Tales. I'm going to read a text aloud, and you're going to follow it on your handout, but there are some differences. So your handout is not exactly the same words that I'm going to be reading aloud, yeah? And if you played the audio too, you know, I've tweaked the written text to make some differences. So your task really is just to listen to the text and to underline the differences between what you hear and what you see on the page. If you're feeling more adventurous, you can actually write in the different words that you hear. Yeah? But I'm not asking you to do that on the first listening. Just underline the differences. Ready? Ready? Okay, right. When March finishes, the rains in April bring the first flowers of spring. At this time, the sun is warm, and in England, lots of people go to Canterbury, to the tomb of St. Thomas Becket. There, they thank the saint for his past help when they were ill. My name's Geoffrey Chaucer. It was 16th of April, 1386, and I was in London at an inn in Southwark, south of the River Thames. I was there with 29 more people. We wanted to go to Canterbury the next day, but before I say more, I want to tell you about some of the people with me. Yeah? How did you do? Yeah? How many words did you get? Underline. You didn't count. Did you underline? You started and then you thought, I've got the idea of this, I've got the hang of this, we don't need to do this activity through to the bitter end. Okay, no, I will be giving an answer key at the end of the session, so if you want, you know, the answers to the activities, you can have them. Okay, right. So quite nice. I had fun doing the adaptation for that one, quite close to the Chaucer original, although very, very, very simplified, yeah? Anybody know this character? Yes, what's his name? Gromit, yes. Gromit the dog and his friend Wallace the human being, yeah? The inventor. Okay. Now, I'd like you to put your pens down. You'll be slapped if you still have your pen in your hand. Okay. Right. So I'm going to read a little text, a short text. And what you're going to do is listen very carefully to it, and then, with the person next to you, behind you, in front of you, you're going to try and reconstruct that text from memory. Okay? So we'll have a go. Yeah? Ready? It was early in the morning on Wednesday the 12th. Full stop. Gromit the dog sat in the kitchen of the little house in West Wallaby Street and made breakfast. Full stop. Suddenly, he remembered something. Full stop. He got up from the table and went to look at the calendar near the door. full stop. Wednesday the 12th was his birthday, full stop. There it was, on the calendar in blue pen, dash, open inverted commas. Gromit's birthday, close inverted commas, full stop. Gromit took a pen and put a big blue X through the number 12. Okay, off you go, in your group of two or three. Try to see if you can... Hello? Your aim is to write a text that is as close to this text as possible. A little bit of a clue there. I think you've got 77 words to aim for. So if it's not exactly the same, but it has 77 words, your text, that's good enough for me. Yeah? Off you go. Okay, can I stop you there? You obviously haven't had time to finish all of that, but we do have a group at the front who's got quite an impressively long paragraph that they've written. I know that some of you had opted not to do the writing bit. You were just doing the oral reconstruction, which is okay, a different interpretation of the task. Okay, so okay, would you like to stand up and address the audience? Yeah.
It was early in the morning at something Wallaby Grove. Gromit the dog was in the kitchen. He was making breakfast. Suddenly he remembered something. He got up and he went to the calendar on the wall. Wednesday the 12th was his birthday, and there it was on the calendar. Gromit took a pen and put a big blue cross through the number 12.
Okay, very nice. Yeah, I'm sure all of you... Yeah, round of applause. I'm sure all of you had something which was kind of close to that, which is fine, which is fine. If we were being really strict, I would say, you know, make sure that your version has 77 words in it, yeah? Not necessarily that it's an absolute reconstruction of the text, but it's got to have 77. That really gets the students thinking, oh, we need an extra adjective, or we need to take something out, you know, to get it to 77. You could do this. Some of you may be more visual, and you may have been a bit challenged by that activity. What you can do is to show the students the paragraph for like 2 minutes and say, look at it, and then you take that away and they reconstruct it from their visual memory. Often, I think, possibly more of us are more visual than we are auditory, so it may have been unduly challenging for you, but you coped brilliantly, so that was fine. Okay. Here we've got some extra words. So this is F. I've stuck in a few words which weren't there in the original. Yeah? So your job is to just listen very carefully to me reading it aloud, and you've got to cross out the extra words. Okay? Ready? Shall we go? Okay. The Blue Light Drugstore was on the east side of New York, near First Avenue. All the medicines there were made by hand. Ike Schoenstein worked there at night. A thin, clever man with a long nose and glasses. He was friendly to all who came for help when they were ill. Ike lived in a room in a house not far from the drugstore. His landlady was Mrs. Riddle, and she had a daughter, Rosie. Ike was deeply in love with Rosie, but he never told her about it. That was strange, because he was very good at talking to people in the drugstore. There was another man living at Mrs. Riddle's house who was in love with Rosie, too. His name was Chunk McGowan. Ike had no hope of winning Rosie's love, but McGowan was very hopeful. He was also Ike's friend. Okay, how did you get on? Yeah, find a nice little way into that. And again, 14. 13. Any of answer on 14? 15. 15. 16, anybody? Okay, you will get the answer key at the end, yeah, so you can check. But basically, you see how the activity works, yeah? And what a fantastic opening to a story you've got. Immediately the plot is set up. This is, you know, love triangle story. Two guys, both good friends, both in love with same girl. How is this going to turn out? Yeah, classic story. Fantastic collection. This is one of O. Henry's stories. I don't know if you know O. Henry. Great American storyteller. And this comes from a level two collection called Eight Great American Tales, all by O. Henry. Wonderful stuff. Okay. And here we've got Circle the Options. And this comes from The Faithful Ghost. It's a Jerome K. Jerome story. So you've got a number of options there. I'm going to read the text aloud, and you've just got to circle the option that you hear. Okay? I was little more than a boy when I first met Johnson. I was home from school for the Christmas holidays. And because it was the night before Christmas, my parents let me stay up very late. When I went to my room that night and opened the door, I found myself face to face with Johnson, who was coming out. He passed through me and, giving a long, low moan of great sadness, he disappeared out of the window by the stairs. For a moment, I was very surprised. I was only a schoolboy at the time. I'd never seen a ghost before, and so I felt a little afraid about going to bed. But thinking about it, I remembered ghosts could hurt only bad people. So I got under the bed covers and went to sleep. How did you get on? Yeah? I mean, again, it's just another way of getting the students focusing in. If you want, you can target this. You can make it a bit more challenging by using actual synonyms. Yeah? Or you can make it a little bit more easy by having completely crazy words that have nothing to do with the text as the false option, you know? So you can raise or lower the level of this dual choice activity as you wish. Okay, right, and basically that is my session, I think, apart from ghost story and love story. How many people have got ghost story? Could you make sure you're sitting together with people with the same kind of story? No, we don't have time. Okay, what I'll do is what I was going to do is to get you into groups looking at the story and looking at different role cards that you could get give to students for group discussion and deciding which would be appropriate for that story. What we'll do is, if you're interested, you can get copies. If you've got any copies of the other story that you'd like to take, these come from Domino's Readers, then feel free to take those.